Hey everybody, it's Britt, lead pastor at Sunridge. Welcome back to our teaching podcast. You know, we are on a mission here at Sunridge to help people find and follow Jesus. We believe in the good news that Jesus welcomes all, regardless of how far you feel from God. That means we're a great starting point to explore Christianity or to sink your spiritual roots deep as a devoted Jesus follower. If you'd like to know more about us, just check out our website at sunridgechurch.org. And of course, we'd love to have you drop in anytime for a visit to learn and worship along with us. And now, here's our teaching for this week. Good morning, Sunridge. Great to see you guys. If you're new here, my name's Britt. I serve as the lead pastor. And you might notice my voice isn't as melodious and smooth as it normally is. I'm fighting a little summer cold here, so I hope that scratchiness doesn't bug you. If it does, I apologize, and I'll try to feel better next week. I might have to cough up a loogie sometime here too, but I do have some water. Have you guys ever had a label that stuck on you, like something that people knew you for, or a label that just followed you, you know, wherever you went in any circle of relationship? You know, sometimes they can be funny, right? I mean, like when the biggest guy in the football team is called Tiny, or one of my son-in-laws was a motocross pro for 14 years, and his name is Phil, but they call him Factory Phil because of all the factory motorcycle companies that sponsored him. So that's still his nickname today, Factory. And Jed calls me Rev, as in Reverend. And that goes back to, like, I've told him stories about the first pastor I worked for. I called him Rev. And so, I don't know, that's not a bad nickname to have. But sometimes nicknames or labels can be darker, like Ivan the Terrible, you know, the Russian ruler known for his cruelty, or there's Bloody Mary, not the drink, but England's, you know, woman ruler that, you know, brought a reign of terror. And then there's Benedict Arnold, you know, who, you know, his very name is now synonymous with betrayal. So labels can reduce a person down to one action or a description they're known for. And, you know, sometimes they're funny, sometimes they're tragic, sometimes it's undeserved, sometimes it's unfair, but once a label gets attached to us, it's hard to shake. And this summer, we're in the teaching series about the people Jesus chose to be a part of his movement. And we've seen so far, they're not perfect people. They're flawed people, very ordinary people known as his disciples. And today, we're going to look at the life of Matthew. And Matthew had a label. It wasn't just a nickname. It was a category, a tax collector. And that wasn't just a label in reference to his career. It was a moral verdict. It meant traitor, cheat, sellout. And if you were a tax collector in the first century, people didn't just disagree with what you were doing. They despised you. And here's what makes Matthew's story so powerful to us, that Jesus doesn't see the label. He sees the man. And he does something that nobody would have expected. He chooses him to be one of his disciples. And that's where we get our main theme for this message today, is Jesus doesn't just forgive our past, he rewrites our future. He rewrites our future. And today we're going to use our four questions that we've been using for all the disciples. Who were they? What do we know about their character or story? How did Jesus shape them? And then last, what does that mean for us? So let's just get to his story. Like, what do we know about Matthew? First of all, he was also known as Levi. Matthew almost always refers to himself as Matthew, but then Mark and Luke sometimes call him Levi, and scholars agree that we're talking about the same person. And that can get a little confusing, right, when you're reading the Bible. But it was actually, as we've been learning, if you think about it, there's been Peter and Thomas. It's common for people to have more than one name, because in the first century, they're living at the intersection of these different cultures. There's a Jewish culture, Greek, and Roman. So a person might have a Hebrew name that was used in their religious and family life, if they were Jewish, and a Greek or a Roman name that would be used in the broader public world. So Levi was likely his Jewish name, a name tied to his heritage. But Matthew, which means gift of God, was probably the name used more broadly to refer to him. So also we see, not only also known as Levi, but he was a tax collector, yet chosen by Jesus. And in one of the Gospels, Matthew 9:9, Matthew writes this: as Jesus went on from there, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at the tax collector's booth. "Follow me," he told him, and Matthew got up and followed him. So when Matthew tells how Jesus called him to be a disciple here, he doesn't varnish over the truth. As mentioned already, he was a tax collector, but maybe you don't know why that's such a big deal. For a Jewish man living under Rome in the first century, a tax collector was seen as a collaborator with the oppressive regime, and so they were morally compromised. Being a tax collector meant you worked for Rome, the government that was oppressing the Jews. You collected taxes from your own people, which that might seem normal, but there was a twist. You were able to overcharge to make your profit, and they did. So he's not just seen as religiously compromised, but he's seen as being corrupt and a traitor to Israel. Another thing we know about Matthew is he was likely wealthy. He was wealthy. You may ask, like, why would someone do this job that you've been describing? Why be willing to sell out? Because it was a very lucrative business to be in. There was a lot of profit in pinching a little from each of your fellow citizens' tax bill. And Romans, they're just happy to get their money. And they also would employ Jewish men in these communities because they know the culture, they know the people. And so they assured that everyone paid up. So, like, even if they overcharged exorbitantly, they would turn a blind eye. Another thing we see about Matthew is he seems to respond immediately to Jesus. The Bible doesn't always give us every detail, so we don't know under what circumstances or how often Matthew had been exposed to Jesus or his teaching. But when he's invited to follow Jesus in Matthew 9:9, it says Matthew got up and followed him. No questions, no whatabouts, no hesitation. And then last, and what might be already obvious to you, Matthew authored a gospel. He authored a gospel. The first book of the New Testament is named after its author, Matthew, and it's this disciple. So that's what we know about Matthew. But what do we see in his character or his story? First of all, we see someone who lived with a label. He lived with a label. He wasn't just called a tax collector. That was his identity. And so virtually every time Matthew's mentioned, his being a tax collector is also mentioned. Again, in Matthew 9:9, Jesus went on from there and he saw a man named Matthew sitting at the tax collector's. And then Mark tells us that as Jesus walked along in Mark 2:14, he saw Levi, son of Alphaeus, sitting at the tax collector's booth. And Luke the same, in 5:27, Jesus went out and saw a tax collector by the name of Levi sitting at his tax booth. And the Bible doesn't say, but being that he was human, that had to affect him. That over time, labels do more than describe us. They tend to define us. Another thing we see about his story is he experienced success without belonging. Success without belonging. Typical Jew, again, living in Rome, under Rome in the first century, would live like a modest, often difficult life. Most of them were trade-based vocations, farming, fishing, carpentry. And so they had very limited upward mobility. But they would have a close-knit faith community. But as a tax collector, Matthew had money, and therefore he had all the benefits and trappings of wealth. He would have had financial security. He would have a comfortable home. He would have access to Roman power. But he didn't have community. So because he was trying to straddle two worlds. He was too Jewish to be Roman, and he was too compromised to be welcomed by his own people. So he lived in two worlds, but he didn't really belong in either. He had what most people would want then, money, security, power, but he had no belonging. Matthew had climbed the ladder, but he came to realize that it was leaning against the wrong wall. And so you can see why he could have been open to something more. So how did Jesus shape Matthew? First of all, Jesus invited him before he changed him. He invited him to follow before he changed him. Jesus' invitation to Matthew wasn't, go clean up your life and then come and follow. In Mark 2:14, as he, Jesus, walked along, he saw Levi, son of Alphaeus, sitting at the tax collector's booth. Follow me, Jesus told him. And Levi got up and followed him. So what is Matthew doing when Jesus calls him? He's not doing good works. He's not collecting offerings for the poor. He's not worshiping in the synagogue. He's sitting at his tax collector's booth. He's in the middle of doing his greedy, unjust work. He's in the middle of compromising everything that Jesus stood for. It reminds me of the Apostle Paul, how he was converted on the road to Damascus. Jesus met him not after he changed, but while he was actively opposing him. That's how Jesus works, because he can see what no one else can. That little space inside people, that even no one can tell from the outside, there's a little light inside people that is telling them, this isn't the life that I was made for. That's my story. When I became a Christian, I've told that story too many times here, but like no one would have said, Britt is going to become a Christian one day. That wasn't what was said about me. And whenever my high school friends come to visit, I always tell them, you can't tell Britt stories, the pre-Christian Britt stories. Because Jesus meets us where we are. That shaped Matthew. You know, Matthew, more than any other gospel writer, emphasizes his past when he mentions himself. He most often calls himself Matthew the tax collector. Now, scholars have debated this, but most believe that that wasn't him living under guilt. That was Matthew shining the light. It wasn't shame. It was gratitude. It was Matthew pointing to how God's grace intervenes in a person's life. And he never forgot that Jesus invited him to follow before he had changed. Another way Jesus shaped him is he redefined his identity. He redefined his identity. Matthew, Mark, and Luke all describe how Matthew invited his friends to meet Jesus at a dinner party at his house. And who were those people? Here's Matthew's own account in Matthew 9:10. While Jesus was having dinner at Matthew's house, many tax collectors and sinners came to eat and ate with him and his disciples. Tax collectors and sinners. These are the only people Matthew can relate with. These are his people. And the religious leaders take this opportunity to criticize this in Jesus' company. In verse 11, when the Pharisees saw this, they asked his disciples, why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners? And Jesus obviously overheard their murmurings, and he responds in verse 12. On hearing this, Jesus said, it's not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. Go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice, for I have come not to call the righteous, but sinners. And that was a rebuke, certainly, to the Pharisees. But don't you think that that was a powerful moment for Matthew as well? See, the Pharisees are simply reflecting the ethos of the religious culture of that day. You see, we righteous people have nothing to do with the unrighteous. We don't associate with those people. They're to be scorned by us. And that's what Matthew lived with every day. And so he knew firsthand what that felt like. And yet now he sees how the grace of God works. He had probably never experienced God's grace until this moment. And when Jesus invited him in his condition to follow him, he gave him a new identity. Not a sinner, but a disciple. He gave him a new community, not an outsider, but one of the 12. Another thing Jesus did is he reshaped his purpose. I'm going to take a drink here. Jesus reshaped Matthew's purpose. Before Jesus, Matthew was all about that money. And that's what he lived for. That's how he measured his success. That's where he found his value. And Jesus reshaped him. Matthew goes from taking to giving, to exploiting to caring, from isolating to connecting. And eventually, he writes a gospel. The man who believed his greatest purpose was to acquire more stuff eventually gives his life. The man who was once known for taking from people now gives the world the story of Jesus. Jesus profoundly reshaped Matthew. So what does that story mean for us? What can we take away? You know, I think there's a lot of modern Matthews today. They're successful, but they're isolated. They're financially secure, but relationally disconnected, even from their own family sometimes. They're respected in some places, but empty on the inside. They're people who seem to have it all, but inside they have a nagging question. Is this it? So here's what Matthew can teach us. Number one, your label is not your final identity. Your label is not your final identity. Matthew was labeled tax collector. Jesus saw something more. Think about that. Think about the disciples that we've talked about thus far. Peter, the denier, but Jesus restores him. John, a son of thunder, restored to the one Jesus loved. James, the hothead. And then when his passion comes under the control of Jesus, he's the first disciple to be martyred. Thomas, the doubter, becomes the person who meticulously, or Matthew becomes, the tax collector becomes the person who meticulously collects all these stories of Jesus' life for the Jewish community that he exploited in the past. And when he mentions himself, the tax collector, in his own writings, that label for him is no longer a symbol of shame. It's now a light of God's grace. Luke captures a story that Jesus told to his disciples. It was of two people who went to pray at the temple. And in 18:10, Luke says, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. Don't you think Matthew's ears perked up when Jesus started telling that story? He has to be like, oh man, what is this going to be? Jesus goes on, verse 11, the Pharisee stood by himself and prayed, God, I thank you that I'm not like these other people, robbers, evildoers, tax collectors, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week and I give a tenth of all I get. They had all seen some version of that. I'm certain of it. But in verse 13, Jesus said, but the tax collector stood at a distance and he would not even look up to heaven, but beat his breast and said, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. No doubt, Matthew knew exactly what that felt like. But there's a surprise twist at the end. In verse 14, I tell you that this man, rather than the other, went home justified before God. For all who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. So Jesus says, the tax collector who honestly and introspectively assessed his life, he was the one justified. That's the power of Matthew's story, that he's not defined by his past anymore. Labels can come from someone else, or we can label ourselves, right? You know, psychologists tell us that our sense of identity has a powerful influence on who we become. The way you see yourself, your core identity, shapes your decisions, your relationships, even your future. And if someone sees themselves as a failure, they'll tend to live cautiously and sometimes even self-sabotage their own success. Who do you see yourself as? What is your identity? I love what John writes in his first letter, 1 John 3:1. See what great love the Father has lavished on us that we should be called the children of God. And then he adds this, and that is what we are. No matter what your past, if you respond to Jesus, to the call of Jesus in your life, your new label is child of God. And I love how he doubles down on that, and that is what we are. So when you hear Jesus say, follow me, stop waiting until you think you have all your stuff together. Take that first step and shed your old life, because Jesus can handle that part for you. The world and often ourselves label us by our worst moment, and Jesus labels us by our next one. Number two, takeaway. Following Jesus will cost us, but it's worth it. It's worth it. I don't know how you imagine that scene at the tax collector's booth taking place when Jesus invited Matthew to follow him, but I think the series The Chosen has nailed it. So let's see it on the screen.
In the same world, Matthew.
Next.
Besides, what else are you going to do with a mind like yours?
Matthew. Matthew, son of Alphaeus.
Yes.
Follow me.
Me?
Yes, you.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. What are you doing?
You want me to join you?
Keep moving, street preacher.
Do you have any idea what this guy's done? Do you even know him?
Yes.
Listen, I said to... What are you doing? Where do you think you're going?
Guys, let me go.
Have you lost your mind? You have money. Quintus protects you. No Jew lives as good as you. You're gonna throw it all away.
Yes.
I don't get it.
You didn't get it when I chose you either.
But this is different. I'm not a tax collector.
Get used to different.
I love that scene. I love that line, get used to different. But I especially like when Gaius asks him, are you going to throw it all away? And he says, yes. Luke provides that detail that we see in Chosen. He's the only one that does it. The other Gospels don't show this. He writes that Jesus said, follow me, and in Luke 5:28, and Levi got up, left everything, and followed him. I don't know about you, but I'd rather have a faith that fits nicely into the life I've planned out for myself. I prefer a faith that keeps me in my comfort zone, avoids hard conversations, and allows me to control every outcome. That's all I need. But here's this insight into Matthew that's unescapable. He left everything and followed him. That's powerful. Now, does that mean that Jesus is asking all of us to do the same in the same way? No, I don't think I'm making an excuse for us. I don't think Jesus is asking all of us to sell our homes and give it all to the church. I don't think Jesus is telling all of us to quit our jobs and go to some faraway land. He could be. But I think it's too easy to go to extremes when we read something like this in the Bible. And that tendency to go to extreme causes us to cancel out cancel the whole thing out so we can't have a real conversation about it? I think the answer is more simple and closer to home. Jesus once told his disciples, Luke 9:23, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves, take up their cross daily, and follow me. And you know, we've said before that following Jesus is more than just asking WWJD, what would Jesus do? I've quoted John Mark Comer, his book, Practicing the Way, often here. We live in a different time and a culture, and so it's in this culture, so it's better for us to ask WWJDIHWM, which is like, what would Jesus do if he were me? Therefore, as Christians, we should ask ourselves, what does it mean today for me to deny myself, to take up my cross and follow Jesus? Where is Jesus asking us to let go? What comfort are we holding on to that like holds us back? What is obedience to Jesus' invitation to follow him? What does that look like for each of us this week? You know, after the Gospels, Matthew kind of fades into the background. But we know that Matthew's credited with gathering all the teachings of Jesus into the Gospel that bears his name. But according to history and tradition, he was still deciding every day to follow Jesus. The man who once sat in a booth collecting from others took the Gospel to places like Ethiopia or Persia. And the story varies, but the point is he went. And I'm confident that he would now say, it was worth it. Following Jesus will cost you, but not following him will probably cost you more. Last thing I think we can take away is your story can become a bridge. Your story can become a bridge. Sometimes we think that God doesn't want to use us because of our past, but Matthew shows us how faulty that logic is. Instead of hiding his old relationships from Jesus, he invites all of them over for a party to meet Jesus. And Luke tells us, Luke 5:29, that Levi held this great banquet for Jesus at his house, and a large crowd of tax collectors and others were eating with them. Matthew doesn't hide his past. God uses it. Think of the Samaritan woman that Jesus met at the well. John 4:28 says, she went back to the town and said to the people that knew her, come see a man who told me everything I ever did. Could this be the Messiah? You know, Jesus told us we're the light of the world. And people often say today that faith should be private, but Matthew shows us that faith is relational. God doesn't call every one of us to go across an ocean, to share the gospel. Mostly he asks us to go across the street or across the room or a couple cubicles over or to lunch or coffee or a beer. And when he opens the door, to just simply tell what God has done in our lives. But here's the thing. When we do that, we're not saying to people, look how much I have it together. Because it's often through our struggles and our failures that people connect to the gospel. I mean, isn't it more real for you as a young mom or dad, and you have littles running all around the house and it's exhausting? Isn't it more real for you to say to your friend, it's really hard. Sometimes I just feel like all I do is pick up after kids. But this is how God is meeting me in that moment. Or those of you that have gone through a divorce, don't you have a story that how Jesus met you in your divorce? Or when you were in chemo? Or in your addiction? Or your return to depression? Or as you've watched your adult children walk away from God when you invested so much in them? Isn't that a place where God can shine his light? The part of our story that we want to hide may be the very place, the very thing God wants to use so our story can be a bridge. I'm going to ask the band to come up. So let's go back to where we started, those labels. Some are funny, some are painful, some still echo in our minds. And if we're honest, some of us walked into this building or watching online still wearing a label. Failure, divorced, addict, not enough, hypocrite, doubter, regret. And some of you have even created a label for yourself. You're the only one that knows you wear it, but it affects you every day. And then we look at Matthew, a man the world had reduced to one label, tax collector. And Jesus walks up to him, not after he changed, not after he cleaned up, but right there in the booth, in the middle of it all. Remember I was talking about like how hard it is to be a parent? Jesus walks up to Matthew in the booth and he says, "Follow me." And from that moment, everything started to change in Matthew's life. Not because Matthew fixed his past, but because Jesus rewrote his future. Matthew the tax collector became Matthew the gospel writer because Jesus chose people like that, and he still does. So the question we should ask today is not what's in my past, but what's my future, and will I choose to follow him? Let's stand and worship together. Hey, everybody, it's Britt again. Thanks for listening. If you need something, if you have a question, or you'd just like us to pray for you, you can reach us through email, info@sunridgechurch.org. We hope you'll listen in again next week, but in the meantime, keep helping people find and follow Jesus.